that and press this and say, hi, you're on KNYOLP Fort Bragg and KMECLP Ukiah. How can I help you?
I can't follow an act by Flynn Washburn.
You can if you like. Oh, Zeke, I forgot that you were going to call, and this is exactly when you call, so fine. That's great.
Uh-huh.
Hi, how have you been?
Oh, I don't know. I'm pretty wiped out. This news is absurd. All the horrible things going on and the craziness is just, like, unbelievable.
Which news are you talking about specifically? Just everything?
Yes, everything. My God, you can't, you know, it's like, wow.
Well, this is definitely the wrong timeline. Somebody stepped on the butterfly at just exactly the right point in the Jurassic period in their time machine, and that's everything's the wrong way. Everything's spelled all different, and the wrong people are in charge.
I would think so, or just world is becoming more aware of what the world's really all about. You know, with much more instantaneous access to things happening around here. Around this planet.
No, this is the sandwich. I could have had a bite of it. I don't even know what the sandwich is. Molly B came in at the beginning of my show. Molly B came in and she gave me a sandwich and some cut up vegetables. She came in with John.
She's a bee. She's endangered.
That's what they say, from nicotinoids. And
so it's nice that she took the time out to do that for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, but I've been looking at this wadded-up piece of paper here, and now I think, you know, I could have just taken a bite of the sandwich that's in that at any point, but I didn't do it. Uh-huh. Maybe I'll do that a little bit later when you start reading your story. Did you bring a story, actually, to read on the show tonight?
Yes, and I have to set down my phone for one moment so I can use the keyboard to enlarge the font here.
Take your time. Do whatever you need to do.
All right.
I remember there was a guy named Travis T. Hipp that I idolized on the radio on KZAP in Sacramento in the early 1970s. He just died a few years ago, but he was a wonderful guy. And he had a guy who would always call him. It was a 100,000-watt radio station, a 100,000-watt transmitter, and in the middle of the Sacramento Valley. So he could reach millions and millions of people. And there was a guy named Hugh, H-U-G-H, Hugh, who would call him up on the phone, and he would say, oh, hi, Hugh. He says, have you got a poem to read? And Hugh would say, yeah. He said, let me just go get it. And then he would put the phone down loudly and wander away and get his poem. And Travis D. Hipp would sit there fuming and waiting, and then he would come back. And so you're ready? Are you ready? I'm asking you now.
Yes.
Okay, well, then go for it. I'm sorry. I was giving you a chance.
Okay. This is called Parable of the Laptop Billionaire, and I wrote this in 2010. Once upon a future time, indeed barely a few years from now, a man will become so rich that even the combined resources of Bill Gates, Donald Trump, and the Russian mafia will not be able to buy him out. In fact, on paper, he will pretty much own the world. Yet, because of the complex and vast web of government restrictions and global treaties, no person, no business will ever own the world. On the other hand, even though any major changes in his stock options, bank transactions, political stances, or favorite line of underwear will inevitably cause one or more second or third world nations to collapse into utter chaos and misery again, he will not be held personally or even morally responsible. In other words, he will not be a benefactor by nature. So you can imagine how much pleading charities will go through to even receive a single red cent from this wealthiest man in the world and all of history. Oh, did I mention he was born with a physical anomaly that looked like two little goat horns poking through his forehead? They were surgically removed in his first week of life. I just had to throw that in, Zeus ex machina and all that good stuff, you know. So you can also imagine how many charities dedicated to feeding the starving children of Africa will come begging at his email box every week. Eventually, he will stop to consider their woeful e-plea bleedings and after some months of deliberation, he will present his decision. Quote, I do not want to help these troubled tykes in the way that you propose, he will proclaim on worldwide satellite link-up, his face commanding every TV screen on the planet. But I do feel as you that their situation is quite urgent, and the sooner generosity comes their way, and greater portions, the sooner will their sorrows end. So what I will do, he will then pause and look up from his speech, and the world will suddenly become a blanket of silence for a few eternal heartbeats. So what he will do is buy all the destitute in the world, not just in Africa, and not just starving children, a laptop. And not just any laptop, but a really high-quality laptop with the latest technology. They will even have Wi-Fi. But how will he produce $2.5 billion, give or take a few tens of millions of laptops, in the short span of 24 hours? Actually, that's none of our business. He owns the planet, patent. So here will be all these starving kids in Africa without a roof over their heads, and many without any parent, sibling, relation, or friend in the world, on the scorched savanna, perishing right before the lenses of first world camcorders as they bring into every home in America and the world those shocking images of freshly dead, emaciated bodies of darkling elves curled around a ThinkPad X-999. Time magazine, front cover, 10 August 2013. For every grave, a laptop. Most unfortunate, this collateral damage, though unavoidable when transitioning from standalone to network. Computer jokes, that is, jokes rendered by AI systems, will be made about humans as nothing more than dumb terminals. Despite this ribbing, underground queer IT experts, both digital and analog, will become the new heroes, and little children shall learn to hack all of us into a better reality. And when they start hacking the world, they will first redistribute all the wealth so that everyone will be comfortably well off. Of course, by then, the laptop billionaire will no longer be a billionaire, not even a millionaire, or a thousand, or a hundredaire. There will be no wealthy person on the planet anymore. Interestingly enough, the laptop billionaire will also be a very handsome gay male who'll discover a new career in tasting flavored birthday cards for Hallmark. There shall become writ into this new law of government and the newest amendment to the United States Constitution, number 482 to be precise, which will also be Moses' 11th commandment, quote, thou shalt own a laptop by right of birth, unquote. Yes, the right to own a laptop provided freely by the government shall become as much a birthright as the freedom to pursue the angel of happiness. And eventually, laptops will become so intimately embedded in our lives that this new law, this 11th commandment, shall finally be altered to read, quote, thou shalt be transferred to a laptop at birth, unquote. The end. Beep, sleep mode.
Well, that would be nice to have a, you know, but now everybody wants a tablet or a phone now, you know, and the phones are getting bigger and bigger. Have you noticed that? They're like the phones.
I noticed them because there was an article saying people want them bigger now, and they're even being jackets and suits with larger pockets to accommodate.
Because
that.
They won't even fit in your pocket. Can you imagine trying to put one of those phones that are so big, they're big as tablets? Can you imagine putting it in your pocket and then thinking that you can sit down without hurting it or yourself?
Well, yeah, of course. But I just think the whole cell phone thing is ridiculous. I just finished reading an article. Well, I was able to hear some of your show, especially the hour previous before I phoned. But otherwise, I was reading some other, doing some other stuff, and this article has the smartphone destroyed a whole generation. Kids are now, you know, they're not going out so much. They're just in their rooms, they're communicating with their friends, you know, texting and so forth. And it's just the social breakdown, socializing a breakdown. One good thing seems to be that they're not driving around in cars all the time and having accidents. But then again, you know, they're not really having face-to-face socializing.
Well, they can take pictures of their private parts and send them to their girlfriends.
Yeah, well, you know.
You could never, you know, that was a thing. You'd have to really go out of your way to do a thing like that before, but that's the easiest thing in the world to do now, and that's nice for them.
Well, I don't know. I think I would like to think that our young people are inspired for more elevating.
They don't know. The kids aren't like the kids. I think this might be the first generation of kids that don't respect their elders.
I didn't respect mine.
Oh, you didn't? Okay, so I'm wrong about that then. How have things been going for you?
Oh, it's been bumpy, but it's like, you know, it's I have friends who are on the streets, and it's like it's always going to be bumpy.
Now it's raining on them.
Well, I love the rain, and I won't allow anyone to complain about the rain in my presence.
I see.
You know, it's like it's ridiculous. The rain is wonderful. I love that, and I'm tired of people who have been in San Francisco for years griping how terrible the rain is and such. And, you know, once in a blue moon, okay, Someone say, wow, this rain is one of us, and I'm ready to give them a hug and kiss them. I said, thank you so much. I'm tired of this negative stuff going on here. The rain is wonderful.
God, the last time I was there in the nighttime, though, there were, you know, camps and people with nothing over their head, and they've got all their possessions around them, and I'm imagining what it would be like to be living like that and have the rain start. Where do all those people go when it rains?
I don't really think it's that bad. It just, but the drivers, it's like you'd think it would never rain in San Francisco. It's like everything, you know, just a little bit of rain, everything shuts down, and, you know, the streets and stuff. It's ridiculous. I always have, I'm always prepared for the rain. I don't like umbrellas, so I have a nice raincoat. I got a Goodwill, nice boots, and I have a waterproof, you know, I have plastic bags to wrap my computer and other stuff in the backpack to keep it dry, you know. But as I said, my homeless friends, it's like, well, once in a while, well, one of them is politically astute, and I can talk with him about stuff. But it's really hard because it's a generational thing too. But they don't, and it's not that the ones I don't know aren't really smart, but if they don't. If they don't, you know, keep up with the news and listen to the Pocket Radio Reason newspaper, they don't know. It's like when I try to talk to them about things I like to talk about, it's like looking at me like I'm from another planet. And also the generational thing, you know, they don't grasp the free speech movement or the 60s quite yet. Yet I like them because they're rebels. You know, but it is very hard. It's like, well, I think being low-income or, let's say, poor in this country and homeless is like living in a war zone all the time. You never know from one day to the next whether you're going to see the person again. You know, something horrible can happen to them, and you can't do anything about it. So, all the, you know, the horrible things America puts on the shoulders of the poor is just absolutely disgusting and criminal.
But... speaking of which, you sent me email about Tom Cahill. Did you actually hear that something happened to him?
No. And that's, you know, and I don't expect to. It's not like there's anybody out there who's going to inform me. I'm sorry to tell you, but our mutual friend Tom Cahill died. I don't have anyone who's going to tell me that.
Well, I don't want to start a rumor. I'm going to, you know, who would know? Allie Cooney would know. I'll call her and ask her.
I emailed her about that. She didn't respond back, so I don't know if she saw it or was too busy to respond or whatever.
Well, no, it sounded like in your email, it sounded like you were angry at him for something, and I didn't understand that.
Well, I was. He's kind of a flake and annoying.
Do you want to explain that to me? Because I don't get it.
I thought it was pretty self-explanatory in the email, but he goes, he was caught up in a lot of right-wing stuff, it turns out. I found that annoying. You know, and always the Kennedy conspiracy and the Rothschild stuff. And he would send me material from that, which is basically kind of material I mark as spam. And then when he did give me support for when I was supporting Randolph Keller after shooting himself, that was way back in 85, you know, that's when I met him. He contacted me because I was in the news and he wanted to visit me and thank me. And, everybody said, I want to give you a hug. I said, well, okay. I wasn't craving a hug or whatever. And then right when he gave me a hug, he said, I'm not gay, I'm not gay. I said, what the heck? You know, it's just like, you know.
I see. I didn't get that was, it wasn't that tone of voice. It just sounded like I wondered what was the problem with him telling you that he wasn't gay.
I don't even think, right when they offer to give you a hug, to give you support over tragedy, they say that to a gay person?
I don't
care what the tone of voice. It could be as sweet as an angel. It's just
Meant that he loved you and cared for you and your friend and was sorry for what had happened, even though he wasn't gay.
Well, you don't say that right when you give them a hug. It's like, wow, I wasn't even thinking about doing anything with him.
Okay, of course you weren't, and I get it now.
I think it's very bad timing.
Okay, well, I'll keep that in mind, and I won't ever say something like that. Somebody asked me if I was gay a couple of weeks ago when Biff Rose came here. They were all in here getting ready to play music. It was like not 3-4 weeks ago, and it was a Monday night, and somebody said something about whether I was queer or not, and I said, no, I'm not. And I remembered something that Alex Bosworth had said to me a few years ago, that somebody had said something like that to him, and he said, no, I'm not queer, but I'm flattered that you might think I'm cool enough to be.
That's a great answer. Well, the hugging a gay person and saying I'm not gay is like it's on the same caliber as two dudes giving each other a side hug and saying no homo, bro. It's fucking insulting.
Okay,
but
well,
I found Tom Cahill to
be. The side hug is like when you put your arm around to the side and you don't put your faces toward each other.
I would presume. I'm not a specialist in it.
I'm not sure I've ever done that. I'm not a side hug.
Well, that's become a big thing. Did you? There was an article I read that I posted to the Mendocino discussion list. UN is declaring that the huge, tremendous rise across the world of persecution of homosexuals. I saw this years ago and predicted it. And they found it terribly alarming. Terribly alarming.
I don't understand it. I mean, it's like picking somebody to not like because of their eye color.
Yes, of course. It could have been anything. It just, you know, it was started by the Catholic Church. Started by the Catholic Church as a way to control people. If you can control the most intimate aspect of people's lives, then you control them entirely. And they created an inner enemy and an outer enemy to take over Europe. The outer enemy was, of course, the Muslims, which them called the Saracens. And then the inner enemies were unmarried people, unmarried men, they called faggots, and married women, they called witches. And it was a very successful maneuver that's been worked to this very day, but it's the most universal bigotry on this planet, and I predicted it's going to go. It's going to become a global thing. We're going to have a global anti-gay holocaust. Though people could reasonably argue we've been having it for decades already. It was exacerbated by the Nazis. They exacerbated the homophobia, and this is what even more so than the Catholic Church bringing it up to control cultures. The Nazis brought it up even further with such a ferocity that it hasn't ended. And when the Allies released prisoners from the concentration camps, most of the homosexuals who were still alive were just sent back to the prisons of their home countries. So the war on homosexuals has not ended by a long shot, although it's just been swept under the carpet, there was Lanny Kotler. I heard him on your show before the before iTunes petered out on me, and he said about we had before the war on terrorism. What was it? War on communism. He said he's half right. The war on communism was also a war on homosexuality, and this is what's happening again. And when Clinton, President Clinton, signed the Defense of Marriage Act and Don't Ask, Don't Tell, I saw what's coming down the line, and I warned people because I was considered an alarmist. We're going to have a Holocaust. It's going to be global. And institutions are going to rise and fall over one issue alone, which is homosexuality. As exactly what's coming down the pike, people are raging and screeching over the idea that they can't get the homosexual rights out of their heads, and it's driving them nuts. Well, I'm sorry, that's what they deserve. It is going to be our passage of fire, but it's also going to give us our victory. It is the I consider homophobia the weakest link in a democracy, because it is the most widely shared bigotry, even among other oppressed minorities. They are so hateful to gay people, they continue to be hateful, and they think it's irrelevant. They think, this is so minor, they don't really count. We can look the other way, including many liberals. We really don't have much support anywhere, and so forth. And we're a very unique minority, because we are not ethnic. We don't have our own cuisine. We don't have our own original, you know, our geographical origin. So that trivializes us too. And we don't have any support like other minorities, blacks, for example, but you can take others too. No support from our families and no support from a religious institution. This is a ridiculous, obnoxious, pathetic, horrific, and demonic things that we have had to live with, and you tied in with my association concern for the poor and disadvantaged. It's quite a tough road to hoe. And reading all this news and stuff, and how what's going on against gay people everywhere and here in this country, it's spreading worldwide. And we don't have Clinton. We have Clinton to thank for contributing to this too, because when he signed DOMA and DAT. He opened the door to legitimize homophobia on a grander scale, which, of course, the Republicans picked up on ever since. So, anyway, I think I've taken up more than enough of my fair share tonight.
You know what? I like to hear all the things that you're saying, because it's a perspective that I don't really do a lot of thinking about.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you. Yes, I've been studying the nature of homophobia for years, and I've come up with conclusions that many people have accused me of being alarmist or just ridiculous and stuff, yet it's all coming true. You know, it's all coming true. We're seeing countries demand persecution, death to gays, more and more. I mean, and Republicans are doing it too. Only that's suppressed. The mainstream media, for the most part, still doesn't carry it, and much of the alternative media doesn't either. You want to know what's going on, you got to hook up with some gay news service to find out, which is, again, totally atrocious and horrific that we should be kept so invisible.
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. You just said gay news service?
Yeah.
Like what?
Well, anything online. You just search, just Google for LGBT news or pick
up
a gay rag.
Well, yeah, of course. That didn't even occur to me.
Yeah, well, the thing is, what gets me about a lot of liberal people is they pride themselves on keeping up to date on issues, on minority issues, black people, a classic example, and others, but they never do it about gay people. You can see on their coffee table there'll be a book about the history of African Americans or how Asians helped build America, but you'll never see a book about gay rights, and yet they claim to be so supportive of gays, but they're also incredibly ignorant. And because of the ignorance, if I tell someone some late news or whatever, oh, did you know this preacher, this publican, said declare the gays should be shot, rounded up and shot. They, oh, you're ridiculous! They holler at me, they scream at me, and I could show it's on the front page of the Bay Area Reporter a few years back. And even gay people do that to me. It's like, what the hell's wrong with them, you know? But that's also the difficulty I have with a few homeless friends I still have. It's like, they don't take the gay rights thing seriously. They if I tell them a few things, they go, but they're not really thinking. It's like, it's so infuriating and frustrating. Right here in the heart of gay Mecca, it's still like, you're invisible. When it comes to gay rights, what the heck's going on, you know? So.
Well, thank you for telling me all those things, Zeke.
Yeah. Well, it's all a big bundle of stuff that, you know, I'm always prepared to talk about a whole bunch of different issues, because the gay issues are my main focus.
Well, just send me anything you want me to read, and I'll read it on the air. And when I'm here in Fort Bragg, call me here in Fort Bragg and read your story. And it's the least I can do. Literally, least I can do.
Yeah, I don't think Eleanor Cooney knows. No, Eleanor Cooney doesn't know Tom Cahill at all, so she won't. If she knew anything about him,
she would let me know. Ellie Cooney doesn't know Tom Cahill?
I already asked her about it. She says, I've heard of him, but she hasn't.
Oh, I had a picture in my head that they were close friends by email. I don't know why I thought that.
No, because I brought it up to her, told him he's contacted me again, and she said, she doesn't know him, so.
Well, email him and find out if he'll answer his email. Because
I have been emailing him. He doesn't get a response. I don't get any response.
Well, he's in France, you know. Maybe it takes a long time for the electrons to get there.
No. We've been communicating for like 7 months, at least twice a week, and then no more.
I hope he's not sick or hurt or dead, because, I mean, he's very old. He's in his 80s now.
Yeah, I think about 83. But I was thinking of just sending him another... snail mail to France and see what happens there, but, you know.
What kind of a stamp do you put on it? How do you mail something to France? Do you have to put a big stamp on it with French words on it? Is it more?
It costs more, yeah.
I don't remember ever sending a letter to somebody in another country.
Yeah, I just go to the post office and they'll tell me how much it costs, and it's still pretty cheap.
Yeah, it's a miracle that there's a post office anymore, the way that right-wing people in the government have hamstrung them, you know.
Well, I think this time around they're going to have everything they want. Because I don't think the human race is going to change until they're really in dire straits. I mean, you know, and people usually don't get anything done until they're in big trouble. It's human nature.
Well, I think we're definitely in enough trouble.
Oh, yeah, but see, I've been trying to wake up more and more politicians and activists how important incorporating gay issues in civil rights is, and that homophobia is a block to the advancement of any other civil rights or even any other issue, including ecological and political and things that don't seem to tie in directly or even indirectly with gay rights, because homophobia has a way of poisoning everything it touches. It's a deep, rich, nasty vein in humanity, and it's the greatest hatred of all the bigotries there are. I think that the story of Cain and Abel was the first incident in recorded fable history, whatever you want to call it, of a homophobia. The first crime was an act of homophobia. I think it might have been maybe some type of psychic virus that came from outer space and spread on the earth and infected Cain first, and then out of that original crime of homophobia came all the other crimes of violence.
Well, I think theory, you might have something there.
Patriarchy, yeah. Well, patriarchy started maybe when some meteorite hit the planet, you know, 12,000 years ago or something. I don't know when Crete fell. You know, the great matriarchy of Crete fell and all this patriarchal violence came up. Well, Terence McKenna has a theory about, you know, the eating the psilocybin or the Amanita muscaria, which tempered our violent, the male, especially the male's violent nature, and allowed us to have a rather idyllic matriarchal culture. But then as the lush regions of the planet dried up, particularly African, those mushrooms began to disappear. And so what did we switch to? Alcohol. Much, much lower level of getting high on and so forth. Anyway, I should let you go.
Okay. Zeke, thanks for calling. You know how to contact me and you know where to contact me. And I'm looking forward to it when you decide to do that.
Okay, will do. Thanks.
Bye-bye.